Okay, it's February 12th, 2024 of the Common Era. The time is 21:12 hours Eastern Standard Time. The number 21:12 is the same backwards and forwards. There's a word for that. I forget what it is. It's on the tip of my tongue, but I can't remember what that word is. Doesn't matter. Walid drowns in the Red Sea. In the Arabian tradition, this is paragraph 4 now of the section called Exodus. In the Arabian tradition, Inset, which is contained within chapter 6 of the Crucible article. So we're at 1, 2, and 3. And then today's is chapter or paragraph 4 within that section called the Exodus. In the Arabian tradition, Inset. Now, I want to say about the paragraph 2, first of all, where we said that this name Ryan is the sound, we found that the throne name of Amenemhet III, his name had the name Ryan contained within it. It sounded like Ryan, but that's just because he had the name of Ra, and Ra sounds like Ryan. So that was how the name of Ryan came to be in his name, and many of the Egyptian pharaohs had the name of Ra in their throne name. So that name Orion would not be unique, perhaps. So that wouldn't really prove, I should be pointing out, just to be, you know, fully, to give full disclosure there. It doesn't prove it. It certainly doesn't deny it. And it is evidence consistent with Amenemhet the second, rather, not the third. Amenemhet the second. We are concerned in our chronology with Amenemhet the second, who lived in the time of Joseph. Joseph. In our chronology, Amenemhet the third is somebody else who didn't succeed directly after Amenemhet the second. So let's not go into that. But we may find no explanation for the few names of kings from Joseph to Moses, but then Walid is the pharaoh in the time of Moses, and he drowns in the Red Sea in the Arab tradition, which is not surprising because that's what the Bible says also. But it's interesting because the Bible doesn't exactly say that he drowned in the Red Sea. It doesn't mention him by name, and or it doesn't say that the pharaoh drowned in the Red Sea. It says they all drowned, essentially, but it doesn't quite even put it in those words. It says there were none found, I guess, that were alive, basically. And Thutmose I has no mummy in the Egyptian rags and tatters of the Egyptian chronology or archaeology. There's no mummy for Thutmose I, so that's consistent with him having been this king who drowns in the Red Sea, the one of the Exodus, the pharaoh. And the other thing is, the other evidence for the fact he was drowned is that, or that he died and his body was never found, the evidence is that he has honorary coffins associated with both his daughter, Hatshepsut, and with his grandson, Thutmose III. And Hatshepsut was not the mother of Thutmose III, but she was his predecessor. Now, it's curious that there are honorary coffins associated with two of the descendants of Thutmose I, so it suggests that he indeed did die a sort of death where his body wasn't found. That could mean that he is, it definitely means he's consistent with being the pharaoh of the Exodus. It doesn't prove it, of course. All of it is evidence that, that we evaluate the evidence and it's consistent as well. That particular detail is remarkable, in fact, is it not? He's got honorary coffins that were donated by his daughter and his grandson, each of them donated a different coffin because they wanted to do something for this pharaoh who died and apparently didn't have his body ever found. Today's scripture, where is it? I had it here a moment ago, didn't I? Where is it? There it is, yeah. It's Proverbs 29:5, little children. An able-bodied man that is flattering his companion is spreading out a mere net for his steps. So look at this. This is interesting because this is also, it can be, the idea of flattering somebody can also be to, you know, you could flatter them in different ways, one of which could be you could pretend to want to get to know somebody. And that happens a lot. You know, you could pretend, in the world, I'm thinking about typically people often try to trick people into doing something so that they can be part of their group. You know, they try to trick you into becoming one of them because they were tricked into becoming one of that group themselves. And so they flatter people by making them think, well, you can become one of us. So they show interest in that person and try to trick them somehow. And it's a common thing, you know, very common. So, you know, they might, for the case of, you know, if they're consumers of alcohol, they might try and trick someone into consuming alcohol, you know. You know, by saying, well, it won't hurt if you just have one drink, and this is the way they do it, right? It's just the same with drugs and all these other things too. They try to trick people, and if you're not aware that it's a trick, the proverb goes on, you know, that it's like spreading out a net for the person's steps. They're trying to catch him, but it's not these people necessarily who are doing it. They don't even know they're doing it necessarily. They're just doing what is socially acceptable in their group, but it's the devil who's causing it to trap this person to become a person who then it spoils all your useful habits when you become part of a group who doesn't have useful habits. You know, so it's a devastating thing if you become part of a group of any kind. It's just devastating. It's the same with any organization that, like, it's like being tricked into thinking that you have to do anything repeatedly, but it starts out with just one thing, one time. Like, you know, when you go to meetings, for example, of Jehovah's Witnesses, they will present to you the idea that you have to go to all the meetings. Once you've gone to one meeting, you'll be presented with the idea that you have to go to all the meetings. And the reason why that is because they're afraid that they will stop going to the meetings, and they themselves are going to all the meetings. In their minds, they feel obligated to do that. And, you know, they make up all kinds of reasons why they have to go to these meetings. You know, the list is endless as to why you would go to meetings. But if you go to meetings, you also become part of this group, you know. So it spoils your own useful habits if you had useful habits of your own. They are supplanted by the habits of these other people, which aren't useful to you necessarily. They might say they are, certainly. So Daniel, let's look at Daniel. What are we looking at? First Chronicles 2. We've used up 9 minutes. These were the sons of Israel: Reuben, Simeon, Levi. I guess it's Levi, we typically say. He should be maybe called Levi. I don't know. Or even some people say Levi. But Reuben, Simeon, the sons of Israel. Reuben, Simeon, Levi, Judah. Issachar, Zebulun, Dan, Joseph, Benjamin, Naphtali, Gad, and Asher. The sons of Judah were Er and Onan and Shelah. This is just going to be a long list of names. The three were born to him from Shua's daughter, the Canaanitess. The sons of Judah, Er, Onan, and Shelah. And Er, the firstborn of Judah, came to be bad in the eyes of Jehovah, so that he put him to death. We don't have time to read any of this. We have to just read. And Tamar, little children, his daughter-in-law, it was, that bore to him Perez and Zerah. All the sons of Judah were five. The sons of Perez were Hezron and Hamul. And the sons of Zerah were Zimri and Ethan and Heman and Kalkol and Dara. There were five of them in all. And the sons of Carmi were Achar, the bringer of ostracism upon Israel, who committed an act of unfaithfulness respecting the thing devoted to destruction. And the sons of Ethan were Azariah. And the sons of Hezron that were born to him were Jeramiel and Ram and Kalubai. As for Ram, he became father to Amminadab. Amminadab, in turn, became father to Nahshon, the chieftain of the sons of Judah. Nahshon, in turn, became father to Salma. Salma, in turn, became father to Boaz. Boaz, in turn, became father to Obed. Obed, in turn, became father to Jesse. Jesse, in turn, became father to his firstborn, Eliab, and Abinadab the second, and Shimeah the third. These are David's brothers. Nathanael the fourth, Radai the fifth, Ozem the sixth, David the seventh. And I think there's another place where it says David was the eighth, wasn't it? Doesn't it say that somewhere or not? Yeah, he had eight sons, and David was the youngest. So this book of Chronicles differs slightly from the other record, which is 1 Samuel 17:12. David, Jesse had eight sons, it says. And their sisters were Zeruiah and Abigail. And the sons of Zeruiah were Abishai and Joab and Asahel, three. As for Abigail, she gave birth to Amasa, and the father of Amasa was Jether, the Ishmaelite. As for Caleb, the son of Hezron, as distinct from Caleb, the son of Jephunneh, who was one of the ones who spied out the promised land, Caleb, the son of Hezron, became father to sons by Azubah, his wife, and by Jerioth. This is the other Caleb, not the one who spied out the land. And these were her sons. Not clear which one of his wives. Jeshur, his son, and Shobab, and Ardon. Eventually, Azubah died, so that was, they were the sons of Azubah. So Caleb took to himself Ephrath, who in time, no, it doesn't say which one of the wives, actually, it doesn't say, bore those three sons, but he took to himself another wife, Ephrath, who in time bore her to him. Her, in turn, became father to Uri. Uri, in turn, became father to Bezalel. And afterward, Hezron had relations with the daughter of Machir, the father of Gilead. And he himself took her when he was 60 years old, but she bore Segub to him. Segub, in turn, became father to Jair, who came to have 23 cities in the land of Gilead. Later, Geshur and Syria took Havoth-Jair from them with Kenath and its dependent towns, 60 cities. All these were the sons of Machir, the father of Gilead. And after the death of Hezron, in Caleb, Ephrathah, with Abijah being the wife of Hezron, she then bore Asher, the father of Tekoa. She bore him. I should say she bore after the death of Hezron, with Abijah being the wife of Hezron, she then bore him, that is Hezron, Asher, after he died, this child was born, Ather, who became the father of Tekoa. So he must have died sometime within the 9 months of the pregnancy. And the sons of Jeramiel, the firstborn of Hezron, were Ram, the firstborn, and Bunah, and Oren, and Ozem, Ahijah. And Jeramiel came to have another wife, whose name was Atarah. She was the mother of Onam. And the sons of Ram, the firstborn of Jeramiel, came to be Maaz, and Jamin, and Eker. And the sons of Onam came to be Shammai, and Jada. And the sons of Shammai were Nadab and Abishur. And the name of Abishur's wife was Abihail, who in time bore him Aban and Molid. And the sons of Nadab were Seled and Appium. But Seled died without sons, and the sons of Appium were Ishi. And the sons of Ishi were Shishan, and the sons of Shishan, Ali. And the sons of Jada, the brother of Shammai, were Jether and Jonathan. But Jether died without sons, and the sons of Jonathan were Peleth and Zaza. These became the sons of Jeramiel. And Shishan came to have no sons, but daughters. Now Shishan had an Egyptian servant whose name was Jarha. So Shishan gave his daughter to Jarha, his servant, as a wife, who in time bore him Attai. Attai in turn became father to Nathan. Nathan in turn became father to Zabad. Zabad in turn became father to Ephlal. Ephlal in turn became father to Obed. Obed in turn became father to Jehu. Jehu in turn became father to Azariah. Azariah in turn became father to Helez. Helez in turn became father to Eliezer. Eliezer in turn became father to Sismai. Sismai in turn became father to Shalom. Shalom in turn became father to Jechemiah. Jechemiah in turn became father to Elishama. And the sons of Caleb, the brother of Jeramiel, were Misha, his firstborn, who was the father of Ziph, and the sons of Merisha, the father of Hebron. It's not clear exactly what that sentence is actually saying. And the sons of Hebron were Korah and Tapua and Rekem and Shema. Shema in turn became father to Raham, the father of Jorkeam. Rekem in turn became father to Shammai, and the son of Shammai was Maon, and Maon was the father of Bethzur. As for Ephah, the concubine of Caleb, she gave birth to Haran and Moza and Gazez. As for Haran, he became father to Gazez. And the sons of Jadai were Regem and Jotham and Gishan and Pelet and Ephah and Sheaph. As for Caleb's concubine, Maacah, she gave birth to Sheber and Terhana. In time she bore Sheaph, the father of Madmanah, Sheba the father of Machbena, and the father of Gibeah. And Caleb's daughter was Aksah. These became the sons of Caleb. Right. So it sounds like he's the son of Jephunneh, because Aksah was the daughter of Caleb. Some people say that the other Caleb was the grandson of this Caleb too, which is, according to Adam Clark, it's not necessarily the case at all. It's just a sort of folklore or something. The sons of Hur, the firstborn of Ephrathah, Shobal the father of Kiriath Jearim, Salma the father of Bethlehem, Haref the father of Beth-Gader, and Shobal the father of Kiriath-Jearim came to have sons, Haroe, half of the Menuhoth. And the families of Kiriath-Jearim were the Ithrites and the Puhites and the Shumathites and the Mishraites. It was from these that the Zorahites and the Eshtaolites came out. The sons of Salma were Bethlehem and the Netophathites, Atroth Beth Joab, and half of the Manahathites, the Zorites, and the families of the scribes dwelling at Jabez were the Tirathites and the Shimeathites, the Sukathites. These were the Kenites that came from Hamath, father of the house of Rechab. A lot of names there. sometimes the name might be the son of a brother, and he might have the same name as his uncle, but we have to be careful. That doesn't mean that the list of the brothers included one of the sons of one of the brothers. It just means that the uncle could be having the same name as the son of one of the other brothers. So we have to be aware of all those things when we're reading these lists, that there's a lot of information there. We don't have to be too certain about it, because there are other pieces of information in the Bible that we can find later. Nebuchadnezzar the king, Daniel chapter 3, made an image of gold, the height of which was 60 cubits and the breadth of which was 6 cubits. He set it up in the plain of Dura in the jurisdictional district of Babylon. And Nebuchadnezzar himself, as king, sent to assemble the satraps, the prefects, and the governors, the counselors, the treasurers, the judges, the police, magistrates, and all the administrators of the jurisdictional districts to come to the inauguration of the image that Nebuchadnezzar, the king, had set up. At that time, the satraps, the prefects, and the governors, the counselors, the treasurers, the judges, the police magistrates, and all the administrators of the jurisdictional districts were assembling themselves for the inauguration of the image that Nebuchadnezzar the king had set up. And they were standing in front of the image that Nebuchadnezzar had set up. And the herald was crying out loudly, "To you it is being said, O peoples, national groups, and languages, that at the time that you hear the sound of the horn, the pipe, the zither, the triangular harp, the stringed instrument, the bagpipe, and all sorts of musical instruments, you fall down and worship the image of gold that Nebuchadnezzar the king has set up. And whoever does not fall down and worship will at the same moment be thrown into the burning fiery furnace." Because of this, at the same time as all the peoples were hearing the sound of the horn, the pipe, the zither, the triangular harp, the stringed instrument, and all sorts of musical instruments, all the peoples, national groups, and languages were falling down and worshipping the image of gold that Nebuchadnezzar the king had set up. Because of this, at the same time, certain Chaldeans approached and accused the Jews. They answered, and they were saying to Nebuchadnezzar the king, "O king, live on, even for times indefinite. Now you yourself, O king, set forth the command that every man that hears the sound of the horn, the pipe, the zither, the triangular harp, the stringed instrument, and the bagpipe, and all sorts of musical instruments, should fall down and worship the image of gold, and that whoever would not fall down and worship should be thrown into the burning fiery furnace. There exist certain Jews whom you appointed over the administration of the jurisdictional district of Babylon, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. These able-bodied men have paid no regard to you, O king. They are not serving your own gods in the image of gold that you have set up. They are not worshipping." At that time, Nebuchadnezzar, in a rage and fury, said to bring in Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. Now, why he wouldn't have already seen that they didn't bow down, if he was there at the proceeding, it's not quite explained. Consequently, these able-bodied men were brought in before the king. Nebuchadnezzar was answering and saying to them, "Is it really so, O Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, that you are not serving my own gods? And the image of gold that I have set up, you are not worshipping? Now, if you are ready, so that when you hear the sound of the horn, the pipe, the zither, the triangular harp, the stringed instrument, and the bagpipe, and all sorts of musical instruments, you fall down and worship the image that I have made, all right. But if you do not worship, at that same moment you will be thrown into the burning fiery furnace. And who is that God that can rescue you out of my hands?" Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego answered, and they were saying to the king, "O Nebuchadnezzar, we are under no necessity in this regard to say back a word to you. If it is to be, our God, whom we are serving, is able to rescue us out of the burning fiery furnace, and out of your hand, O king, he will rescue us. But if not, let it become known to you, O king, that your gods are not the ones we are serving, and the image of gold that you have set up we will not worship. Then it was that Nebuchadnezzar himself got filled with fury. Very similar to the way drug addicts or just worldly people who are, you know, addicted to alcohol and drugs, or whether they're addicted or not is not the point. Users of alcohol and users of drugs get very angry when someone will not conform and go along with them and join up with them and do the same things that they do. Makes them angry. Even though, you know, it doesn't start out with a rage necessarily, but it makes them angry. Then it was that Nebuchadnezzar himself got filled with fury, and the very expression of his face was changed towards Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. He was answering and saying to heat up the furnace 7 times more than it was customary to heat it up. 7 times more heat up the furnace, he said, and to certain able-bodied men of vital energy who were in his military force, he said to bind Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego in order to throw them into the burning fiery furnace. Then it was that these able-bodied men were bound in their mantles, their garments and their caps and their other clothing, and were thrown into the burning fiery furnace. Isn't this interesting? That these able-bodied men, it keeps coming up, and it even came up in our proverb, and yet that was randomly selected, that proverb. Able-bodied man who's flattering his companion is spreading out a mere net for his steps. If you're not able-bodied and you're flattering your companion, you know, you don't know any better, maybe, if you're not able-bodied, but if you're able-bodied, you know better. That's the difference. Just because the king's word was harsh, verse 22, and the furnace was heated to excess, these able-bodied men that took up Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego were the ones that the fiery flame killed, but these other able-bodied men, the three of them, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, fell down bound in the midst of the burning fiery furnace. They weren't dead. At that time, Nebuchadnezzar, the king himself, became frightened, and he rose up in a hurry. He was answering and saying to his high royal officials, was it not 3 able-bodied men that we threw bound into the midst of the fire? They were answering and saying to the king, yes, O king. He was answering and saying, look, I am beholding 4 able-bodied men walking about free in the midst of the fire, and there is no hurt to them. And the appearance of the 4th one is resembling a son of the gods. Then it was that Nebuchadnezzar approached the door of the burning fiery furnace. He was answering and saying, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, you servants of the Most High God, step out and come here. At that time, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego were stepping out from the midst of the fire, and the satraps, the prefects, and the governors, and the high officials of the king that were assembled were beholding these able-bodied men, that the fire had had no power over their bodies, and not a hair of their head had been singed, and even their mantles had not been changed, and the smell of fire itself had not come onto them. Nebuchadnezzar was answering and saying, blessed be the God of Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, who sent his angel and rescued his servants that trusted in him, and that changed the very word of the king and gave over their bodies because they would not serve and would not worship any god at all except their own God. And from me, an order is being put through that any people, national group, or language that says anything wrong against the God of Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego should be dismembered, and its house should be turned into a public privy, for as much as there does not exist another God that is able to deliver like this one. At that time, the king himself caused Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego to prosper in the jurisdictional district of Babylon. So good things come to those who refuse to go along with the crowd. That's what that says. Who keep their integrity. That's the other thing. It's about integrity, right? Like when it said, a faithful man who can find, right? A multitude of men will proclaim each one his own loving kindness. But a faithful man who could find, that was one of the Proverbs, we had the other day. Was it Proverbs 20:6? Not even sure, but that was one of the proverbs we had the other day. A multitude of men will proclaim his own loving kindness, but a faithful man who can find, Proverbs 20 and 6 from the other day. Well, this is talking about integrity. Is another way to look at this. Faithful, but also integrity. Like when somebody's trying to induce you to become part of a group, that's got to do with your integrity. You can't become part of a group, you know, without giving up your own integrity. Like that's what happens when you become part of a group. You lose your integrity. In other words, you know, if you had any reputation before becoming part of the group, your reputation becomes besmirched by whatever problems the organization has. You know, it becomes affected by the organization. It's unavoidable. Your own integrity doesn't exist anymore. You're now part of a group, and it's about the group's integrity at that point. And so, I mean, so this whole thing here, a man of integrity who can find, could also have been this, right? Not to say that it's the same thing as a faithful man either, but it's another thing that could be said there. A multitude of men will proclaim each his own loving kindness. But a man of integrity, it doesn't quite work, because in this case we could reword it and say a multitude of men will proclaim the loving kindness of the multitude. But a man of integrity who can find, that's how we could rewrite that to make another proverb. And then look what it says here in verse 7. The righteous is walking in his integrity. You see that? That's the next verse. I didn't even know that, actually. I just noticed that now. Anyway, so it's this idea of integrity. You can't keep your integrity if you belong to a group. You know, because you're tricked into it, or whatever. You know, because you're, if to the greatest extent possible you stay free of the group, then you're maintaining your integrity. That's the idea. Integrity means wholeness, right? You keep your entirety, your wholeness of yourself intact and free of outside involvement. That's the idea. So to do that, you have to be separate from the group. Not that you can be completely depart from the whole world. Like Jesus said, you know, don't take them out of the world, but watch over them because of the wicked one. He asked Jehovah about his followers. So February 12th, 2024 of the Common Era. That's today's date. And 21:45 is the time, Eastern Standard Time. Little children, it's wonderful to be with you. I love you very much. I'm Ward Green. The time is... I already said the time. But on my behalf, it is. It's Liv Dusty and Cassie saying bye for now.